Early winners do not make good leaders. Early winners don't make good leaders. People that start off in their career knocking it out of the park, getting number one on this promotional exam, number one on that promotional exam, do not make good leaders. Because success is a combination of judgment and luck. And a lot of early winners are simply lucky. They just don't know it. They took a captain's test and 100 other people took that test and they scored number one. And now all of a sudden they have this signaling that they're awesome. Good leaders are those that have been kicked in the teeth enough and keep getting back up. They embrace the suck. It is hard. They've learned that there's a difference between luck and judgment, and they start developing their judgment.
Being rescued from a three-story apartment building.
What's your emergency?
The First Responder Liaison Network is proud to present to you the Kitchen Table Podcast. Join us as we explore leadership from perspectives around the globe, from firefighters to fire chiefs, civilians to CEOs. Our conversations have one simple goal: build more leaders.
Today's Leadership Conversation 59. The Kitchen Table is brought to you by the First Responder Liaison Network. Network is organized for the development, implementation, and ongoing support of mentorship and professional development programs inspiring our youth and young adults to mature into engaged civic leaders and resilient community sentinels. Our core mission is to mentor underrepresented urban and rural youth interested in public safety careers. Music and graphics are brought to you by Kyle Elephant Productions. Today's conversation, we're diving into the fundamental principle of leadership, positive succession planning, preparing the future leaders to replace the current ones. Our guest today is a fire chief with 29 years of experience in the fire service, with a doctorate in leadership from USC. He currently serves the El Cerrito Kensington Fire Department after serving the Sacramento City Fire Department for 25 years. During his career, he has held the rank of paramedic firefighter, engineer, captain, battalion chief, assistant chief, and fire chief. He worked on the ambulance, fire engine, ladder truck, type 1 hazmat team, and heavy rescue unit. He has experience in high-rise, large commercial, urban interface, basement, and balloon construction fires. Before promoting to the executive staff, he served as BC1, battalion chief in downtown Sacramento. In addition to the doctorate degree, he has two associate degrees, a bachelor's in finance, a master's in security studies from the Naval Postgraduate School. He teaches command and control of major incidents and chief's general administration classes for the California State Fire Marshal and is an instructor for elite command training. He also consults with fire departments in active shooter events, succession planning, leadership, and post-fire analysis. He has published over 20 articles on homeland security and fire service topics. On the 59th episode today, we welcome Dr. slash Chief Sailors to the kitchen table. Good morning, Chief.
Good morning.
How are you today? Thanks
for having me, Matt. It's an honor to be here with you.
Well, I appreciate it. And it is Division Chief Heather Marquez, who you know, was on the show just a few weeks back. She was the one that brought us here with the leadership challenge, said you have to reach out to, she said Chief Sailors, and then she goes, well, Dr. Sailors. So call him Dr. Chief Sailors. So here we are. And thank you so much for taking up that challenge. Would you mind sharing a little bit about Eric Sailors before we dive into this leadership talk?
Yeah, let me say it's unfair having to follow up Heather. That's totally uncool, but that's the way it goes. So set your expectations low. Yeah, it's always weird to hear your own profile because you're thinking to yourself, who the hell are they talking about? but you know, there's a human side to me. So I actually did live in Washington for 5 years when I was a kid. I was born in Grass Valley, Northern California. And then when I was five, we moved to Redmond, Washington, and then to Marysville, where I went to grammar school, and then Camano Island. And then we left Camano Island just before junior high when I moved to Texas. Lived in Texas for a little while, and then Eastern Los Angeles, where went to a few years of school, and then SoCal, and then I wound up in Sacramento in college. So kind of anchored in Sacramento, went to Sac State, and worked for a few small fire departments before I took the challenge to work for Sac City. Sac City is a lot of fun, but it comes to costs. It's a scrappy little city. It's just 24 stations, kind of medium size, but it's got 66 high rises in the capital and two rivers, and there is just an unimaginable amount of shit that happens in that city on a daily
Sure.
basis, from riots to civil unrest to water rescues to hazmats. So it was a fun 25 years. And now I'm in the Bay Area, and it's for me it's really interesting because I had a lot to learn coming out of an executive chief as a of a medium-sized city. Now I'm in earthquake country. My department sits right on the Hayward Fault. We're also in wildland country, which is right on the backside of where the Oakland Hills fire happened. And it's all about emergency management planning and disaster planning and deep contingency plans, which I was just used to managing large fires. This is a different domain for me. So it's very humbling, and I'm learning a lot every day. And I'm the chief of actually two fire departments. One's a city and one's an independent special district. So I get to learn the world of special districts versus just cities.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's my 30 second, but one last wrap up on me is I've been told, and I have to warn others, there's two sides to me. Apparently there's two people that live in me. There's Dr. Sailors and then Viking Eric. So Dr. Sailors says a lot of big stupid words like the empirical evidence to support that action. Then Viking Eric occasionally gets angry and is like, "Hey, that's some stupid shit right there. Let me tell you how this really works." So I warn people about that because sometimes, depending on what topic we're talking about, they'll come out. All right,
Also,
so there's my 30 seconds, man.
I appreciate that. So I'm gonna just start with that. So Dr. Sailors,
Yeah.
what motivated you, I guess, to say, you know what, I'm gonna get a doctorate degree because you had a what was it? It was a master's
Masters,
in
yeah.
security studies, and then you continued. So what was that journey like?
That was curiosity on my
Oh.
part. It was a dumb idea.
Oh, I don't think
I
so.
got out of, so you get your bachelor's, right? And the bachelor's, they tell you what you need to know. So you're just taking in the answers and regurgitating them. And some of the concepts are really hard to take in. But then you get in the master's degree and they stop telling you what they need to know and they start forcing you to ask the right questions. It's a different mindset. So now asking the right question is way harder than regurgitating
Yes,
the right answer, right?
absolutely.
And that was hard and so inspiring to me that when I was done with the master's, it was just curiosity. I was like, "Well, what do those guys know? Like the guys that go get the terminal degrees. What do they do?"
Yeah.
So I started applying. I got accepted to a lot of big schools, and USC came along, and I remember the phone call I got where I was standing when a woman named Jennifer called me on the phone and said that I had been accepted. And I had two emotions immediately. One was wow, and one was, oh my God, what have I done?
Why?
Because I was like, oh, this is so cool. I got accepted to a tier one university at the doctorate program. And then the other side of me was like, you dummy. Like, what? This is going to be 4 years of hell. What are you
Yeah.
thinking? But like everything, I learned a lot.
Yeah.
And one of the synapses for those that go into higher education, you're going to meet some smart people. And I think that's one of the neatest things is you are going to be around some really intelligent people that have thought deeply about topics. And for me, that's the
Yeah.
biggest benefit for me for school.
I think remaining curious is such a key, and it's a key leadership trait for anybody that is aspiring to learn, progress their careers, just become better in general in life and in everything they do. So, is higher education important in the fire service?
It is now. Yeah,
Why is
there's
that?
two things that are happening to us in the fire service. One is we're getting outpaced by our competition with higher education. And so let me say, education doesn't necessarily make you smarter. Some of the dumbest people I've met in my life had PhDs. It does a few things for you. One, it's going to give you a little bit of credibility. And that is important for us because we're starting to sit across the table from people that have MBAs that will look down on us. We may be way more smarter than they, but just because they have a degree from Duke, they look at us and say, "But you got an associate's from a junior college. Nothing you say has any relevance." You don't fit into my internal reality right now. So it does give you a little bit of credibility, but it makes you resilient in the fact that it allows you to bring in change. So we get a lot of training in the fire service, and training is very robust. It sticks with you. And by design, it resists change, right? I can still throw a wooden 24-foot straight side ladder because of my academy, even though ladders don't exist anymore. That type of training is robust. It resists change. I'm an instrument rated pilot, and I had an engine out at 11,000 feet and had to dead stick my plane into an airport out in the middle of Nevada. My training resisted all of the stress that came in that event. But see, it also puts us into a mindset of standing still and resisting. And education is the opposite. Education actually forces you to change and adapt, and it brings in new topics. It pushes you out of your comfort zone. It forces you to think about change and how to navigate it. So it is incredibly useful for future leaders in the fire service because we are adapting and changing faster than we ever were because the environment around us is changing. Just the injection of lithium-ion batteries is forcing us to entirely rethink about what the hell we're going to do with a structure fire.
Absolutely. And what would you say to some individuals, this being a podcast geared toward emerging leaders, but really any leader, formal or informal in the fire service, what would you say to an individual that is just like, you know what, I don't want to do formal education. I want to go back to school. I think it's useless. What would you say to them to help them prioritize higher education if they seek kind of a higher role or higher rank in the fire service?
Let's start with a statement that it might be controversial and anger some people.
I love it.
Early winners do not make good leaders. Early winners don't make good leaders. People that start off in their career knocking it out of the park, getting number one on this promotional exam, number one on that promotional exam, do not make good leaders. Because success is a combination of judgment and luck. And a lot of early winners are simply lucky. They just don't know it. They took a captain's test, and 100 other people took that test, and they scored number one, and now all of a sudden they have the signaling that they're awesome. Good leaders are those that have been kicked in the teeth enough and keep getting back up. They embrace the suck. It is hard. They've learned that there's a difference between luck and judgment, and they start developing their judgment. And they realize, shit, sometimes you're just unlucky. That's just the way it goes. But that's what makes good leaders. You can't knock them down. When you get the crap kicked out of you early in your career, you take a few big losses. Maybe you don't promote. Maybe you fail your first few promotional exams. Maybe it takes you a long time to get a job. If you are paying attention, you start to realize what is truly important, what the principles of the fire service are, because you have to sit back and think about what the principles are in you, what the principles of the fire service are, and why you're here and why you're going to keep going. That builds good leaders. They have empathy when they get to the top. They don't forget where they came from, and you can't knock them down very easily. They get punched in the face, they get right back up. That type of person is the type of person that goes out and starts to seek other deeper education because they realize they've really got to practice good judgment. They got to be centered on what is important to them, and they have to develop tools and judgments around that. And they also realize that they don't have all the answers, right? It's a form of humility. And that's the difference between the early winner. The early winner tends to develop arrogance. They tend to develop a false sense of self-confidence because they were number one in their class, number one on the engineer's exam, number one on the captain's exam, number one on the BC's exam. They're just like, holy shit, I'm knocking it out of the park. Nah, you're usually just getting lucky. I'm not interested in those kind of guys. I'm actually really fascinated with the guy that took four battalion chief's tests and then eventually ranked number one and is now still willing to step up and do the job. That starts to drive people to a level of humility, which gets them out of their silo to go seek what in the hell is the military doing about this? How does business think about this? And not that we are a business, but it gets you out of your shell to go, you know what? I'm going to still keep learning. And there's a few places to learn. The School of Hard Knocks is a great teacher, but you also have educational institutions and you have people in there that have studied one topic their entire life, and they have a lot to offer. It's not everything to you, but it'll be pieces and chunks. You'll go, holy crap, that was really useful. I'm going to humbly take that in, and now I'm going to use that to meet the principles that I found in myself. And I'm going to know, you know what? I've had some ass kickings in my early career. I'm going to keep getting some ass kickings, but I know one thing, I just keep getting back up. Like, you can knock me down, but I'm resilient. I will get back up. And there's going to be good days and there's going to be bad days, but the bad days aren't going to derail me because I'm going to keep getting better at my judgment.
What I've heard so far, you've talked a lot about curiosity, and I heard you say judgment, but you said embrace the suck. And we've heard that a lot, whether it be from David Goggins or the other book from the other Navy SEAL. Can't remember his name. But it sounds like failing, and correct me if I'm wrong, but failing is not just necessary, but you would like to see people that are failing a lot because it's showing that they're trying. And you like to see that individuals not only just fail and get back up, but then are consistently being curious on, well, how do I get better? Let me search for other avenues, right? Maybe it's not just simply study harder at the next promotional exam, but maybe it's going out and saying, you know what? Maybe I'll just go out and seek a higher education because that will broaden my perspective on things. So with that, what would you say are, you being, with the experience that you have, Chief, with having the higher education, you serving in several fire departments, if I were to ask you, Chief, what are three qualities in an emerging leader that you say they must have? What would those be?
Number one, empathy. Number one quality you have to have is empathy. So you're talking about influencing others. You're talking about aligning them to work as a team and move towards a common mission. And in order to do that, you have to be able to put your feet into someone else's shoes. You have to be able to see the world through how they're seeing it. The simple definition of that is empathy. If you don't have empathy for those that you are trying to align and bring together, it's going to be tough. It turns into more of a command and control than it does influence and inspiring, right? So that's number one. Number two, you have to be adaptable. The world is going to change around you. You think you have the right answer now. Well, you have the right answer yesterday. Today's answer is different, right? That has been my reality my entire career. Someone told me a long time ago, get comfortable with feeling uncomfortable. Yeah, it is true. Just when you think you have it figured out, the game changes. The world we live in is a complex adaptive system. It adapts to everything that gets pushed on it, and it is constantly changing. So you have to be adaptable, always. The last thing that you need is resilience. Now, that term I define as the ability to get back up. And I know I say it a lot and I preach it a lot because it sometimes gets forgotten, right? There are some people. Bad things happen to really good people. It
Absolutely.
is unfair. I get it. Temper tantrums get you nowhere.
Agreed.
Those that get back up first win. And if you are mission oriented, then you are going to win the mission, right? So those are
Absolutely.
the things that you need. So we tie that in. I have a love-hate relationship with the word leadership, because it becomes so nebulous it gets used for everything, right? Like,
Yes.
oh, we got a leadership problem. No, he's a good leader. She's a great leader. I'm like, whoa, let's time out really quick and think about, that word, so that we can define it for ourselves. And then that ties back into these three traits we need, right? Because there's a difference between leaders and managers. Not that one is not better than the other. Leadership without management kind of goes nowhere,
Agreed.
right?
Agreed. Yeah.
I'm not valuing one without the other. They're two different skill sets, right? Managers, they plan, they organize, they put in controls, right? They're critical.
Absolutely.
Leaders set direction, they align people, right? They motivate and they inspire. And when you think about the definition of that term, it's a conjunction of multiple phrases, right? It's to lead, lead, which is to guide. So that means you are dealing with groups of people, right? By definition, that is something you have to do. Then it has an ER at the end of it, right? That is the idea that, you know, you are actually taking action. You're doing something, right? And then the ship is that, yeah, it's you right here. This is you doing this. I like the metaphor of guiding somebody to the peak of a mountain, right? You're guiding a group of people. You are actually the one that are pulling this up this hill. So once you define that and you realize the heavy task that is, you come back to those three things. All right, I got to have empathy for the people that are going to be willing to follow me. I can't just send them into a shitstorm and not acknowledge how hard it's going to be, right?
Yeah.
I myself have to be totally adaptable to every situation. And I myself have to keep getting back up. There's no temper tantrums allowed. I can have a timeout occasionally and vent a little bit, but there are no just straight out temper tantrums allowed because everybody's following me and they're looking to me. So those are the things that have to happen.
So my question is, who teaches that? So, right, let's use the premise or the example of you have some new firefighters, some emerging leaders, some aspiring officers, we'll say, in the fire service. And your department or the formal leadership above you recognizes that the future leaders of this organization must demonstrate empathy, must be adaptable, and must be resilient in everything that they do. But who teaches them those things? And I know we're going to get into leadership training versus leadership education versus leadership exposure. Maybe this is the segue to that. But who teaches that, right? If an individual, right, and I always believe that an individual is responsible for their own development, right? A department won't necessarily be able to provide everything for an individual, right? So there's some personal accountability and responsibility for your own development. But is there intentionality from departments, or are there departments that teach empathy, adaptability, and resilience if they're saying these are what's necessary in our future leaders here at this organization?
So there's so many challenges with leadership, leadership books, leadership training, leadership education, because very few people actually slow down and think about what those terms mean, right?
Yes, agreed.
The challenge with leadership books is, goddamn, we keep writing them. I mean, there's so many. You think we would have got it right by now, right?
You'd think.
there's only one or two foundational geometry books, right? I got a copy, you know, of Euclidean's back there. You know, there's only one or few, you know, foundational calculus books. I got Newton back there, but like in leadership, is So the challenge is that so many of the books in the modern day of leadership are methodologies. Their methodologies lacking principles. So you have to know the principle, the problem, and then you develop methodologies around to meet the principle, the problem. So many of our books are just simply methodologies, and the readers don't realize that.
Yeah.
So many methodologies are context bound, right? They have to fit the situation. You look at, you know, leadership books from the early 1900s, then to the 50s, then to the 60s, like a geek like me does, and you realize, oh, it's shifting, it's changing, because the context is changing. Society's changing. People's perceptions are changing, right? And you may have leadership methodologies that work fantastic on the East Coast that don't work on the West Coast.
Yeah.
Right? You may have leadership methodologies that roll out and they're like, yeah, this is everything in New Jersey, and you bring it to Berkeley and you're like, oh, this doesn't work at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
So this chunk of methodologies, but let's work our way back to the principles of the problem. If we anchor ourselves in the principles, now we're going to start talking about how do we train and educate people?
Yeah.
All right. So the principles of the problem of leadership, it is a positive succession plan. That is the principle of the problem. That works its way across timelines. It is a positive succession plan. How do you Guide the people behind you to replace you and be better than you. If you start with that as the principle of the problem of leadership, how do I guide you to be better than me? Because I'm on a short time frame, right? I am just a flash in a pan. I'm here, I'm gone. You're behind me, you're just gonna be a flash in a pan, but I have to get you, I have to have a positive succession plan. If I violate that, then I'm actually not really leading.
Huh.
I'm doing something else. And then all the methodologies I'm having and I'm running around spouting off, if I'm not actually doing that, then the organization is going to fail.
So let me pause there for a minute, because I want to capture that just very, very briefly. So is it fair to say that, and I say that I pause because I want the listeners to really resonate with what you just said, because I believe it's very important. I want to capture it and highlight it. So would it be fair to say that company officers in the fire stations today, those that are listening, would it be fair to say that their principal or one of their primary objectives right now is to be in the fire station, making sure they develop those, whether it be engineers or firefighters working under them, if they so aspire to be company officers or whatever level of training or development they want, their principal, and they must be living off the fact that, hey, I am training you today and every day to make sure you are better than me tomorrow and when I leave.
Yes,
and
that
then
is
the
the principle of the problem.
And then to go even further,
yes.
Let's say chief officers, their job is
yes.
to then develop the current company officers to make sure that they are training them to make sure that they are the future chief officers of that organization.
Yes.
And every rank in between, above and below, what I just demonstrated. So that is the principle and objective of our leaders current today.
Yes, that is the principle of leadership, whether you're a company officer or a parent,
yes,
right, or some other species, whatever you are doing, your DNA is driving you to make sure that who's coming behind you is better than you.
Love that.
You as a company officer need to prepare yourself so that you can make those below you better than you. You as a chief officer need to prepare yourself that the company officers behind you will replace you and be better than you. That principle, as I said, it spans time, it spans species, it is fundamental in what DNA does for us. And that is the principle of problem for leadership. Everything else is just fucking methodologies.
Yes.
And
oh,
some
I
of
love
them
that.
are just thrown against the wall as fast as they can spit them out.
Yeah.
Some of them sound fancy and neat, but if you don't understand the principle of the problem, then you are simply on this merry-go-round of nonsense.
I love that. So here's I guess not rhetorical, right? Because
Yeah.
The question, it's a thought, but it's also a reflection. But I also want to see where it goes to those, especially listening. What would the fire service look like in 20 years if starting today, every leader, formal, informal, adopted that principle that we just talked about?
There wouldn't be a whole lot of gaps in our free time because we would all be preparing ourselves to prepare others. It's tough to actually train and educate and develop others. You've got to be
Agreed.
Good at it yourself.
Agreed.
And it is more than just simply telling them. You actually have to help them develop. So they're, academically, there's four levels of knowledge. There's declarative knowledge, conceptual knowledge, procedural knowledge, and metacognitive knowledge. So we'll bridge that into something simple that we know. This is cognitive science, right? This is
love
like
it.
It's like me that get doctorates in this stuff, right?
Love this
So you
stuff.
Think about Bridget, like, okay, a tank line, like, okay, declarative knowledge. You know what it is. You know the word. You say tank line. Oh yeah, fantastic, a tank line. You look at it. Yes, that there is a tank line. All right. Conceptual knowledge. What's a tank line for? Oh, well, a tank line is for, a quick attack and a fire. We got to be within so many feet of the engine, depending on the length, but I'm going to pull it. It's pre-connected. It's going to get water fast. Okay, conceptually, cool. All right, you got the idea of what a tank line is, right? It's not a supply line, right? We don't hook
right.
that to a hydrant, and we don't hook it to a sprinkler system.
Right?
All right. Procedural. That's the next level of knowledge. Okay, procedurally, how do you do this? Oh, well, shit, that actually takes a lot of practice. and understanding, like, I gotta have my hand here, it's gotta be a loop here, right? If I do, if I get the procedure messed up, if I go but I pull the loop before I shoulder it, it's gonna be a spaghetti mess, right? If I shoulder it and pull the loop and walk straight towards the door and then drop it all into a bundle, it's gonna be a mess, right? Like, I'm probably gonna have to, like, walk away from the building and then come back, right? This is procedural knowledge that we tend to get to through a lot of practice. Then the fourth level is metacognitive knowledge. That is stepping back and looking at the tank line as it fits in the system of the whole engine and understanding when and when not to use it. Mm-hmm. Now, metacognitive knowledge takes a long time to acquire, right? So now that we've got that basic understanding and you hand this task to a captain and you say, look, man, I need you to bring your firefighters up to a metacognitive level knowledge of a tank line so that when they become captains, they can make good decisions. I do not need robots. Mm-hmm. I need thinkers. But that takes a lot of work on your
Yes.
part, a lot of effort. And you yourself, here's the shitty part about this mission. You yourself got to be a metacognitive knowledge level at that
Absolutely.
point.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Which is not easy. I had a karate school for 5 years. When I was younger, I was a pretty competitive kickboxer and a boxer. Me and my buddy opened a karate school. I thought I knew a lot about boxing and kickboxing because I fought for so many years. I had a lot to learn when I started teaching others. a lot of gaps in my game.
Sure.
And then when I became a, then when I got in the corner and I was coaching other fighters, I was like, oh shit, this is metacognitive knowledge now. Like, mm-hmm. now this is some big gaps. So yeah, that is the principal problem with leadership. And it takes a lot of work.
Yes. Yes. And I mean, it goes to the saying, I'm sure you've obviously heard it, is leadership is not easy. I mean, maybe some of the concepts is easy, but applying it and doing it day by day it takes work. No one ever said it was just going to be as simple as do this and you're done. And so a question that I have now is, how do fire service instructors, mentors, leaders become good mentors? So my point being is, when individuals get put into roles to either teach a discipline or they get promoted to, say, a training officer, company officer level. And Chief Castro's says this a lot, is every company officer is the lead training officer of the crew, right? Not the training division. So how do company officers become great mentors? Like, are they, you know, I never went through a class that taught me how to be a great mentor. I never went through a class that taught me how to be the best instructor or teacher. I learned that there's job on the job training, there's exposure, there's curiosity, which you talked about, right? Does that kind of make sense? Like, we have people in positions to be good instructors, but are we teaching them to be good instructors, or are we just teaching them the knowledge of the topic at hand?
Yeah. And we struggle with this in the fire service a ton because we will put on a class. And maybe it's a 2 hour class.
Yeah.
Right. And we'll use the word leadership and then we'll throw some methodologies out onto the table. They sound fancy. And then we walk away. Right. And our captains, our firefighters, our chiefs, they tend to go right back to doing what they're doing because that's what works. We'll do that over and over again for generations.
Yes.
Yeah. But if you really want to understand something, you got to start with walking in and saying, here's the principle of the problem. Take this in and think about this. Now, I will start to educate you. I'm gonna walk you through declarative knowledge, right? When you get to the conceptual knowledge. We'll talk about procedural knowledge on leadership and then metacognitive knowledge on leadership, but that takes time.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes the opportunity for you to go back and practice it.
Yeah.
Which is a long, long process to do. And we don't do that at all in the fire service. We don't really have any ability to do it. But let's look at a successful model in our distant cousin. Let's look at the military,
mm-hmm.
and how purposeful they are on something like this. We'll take an example. One of the three M's, McChrystal, Mattis, McRaven, right?
That's
right. I call them the three M's.
Yes.
Just because they write. and a few of them write well. All right, so McChrystal, right? So his purposeful training, West Point at the age of 17, they start developing him as a leader immediately, and he doesn't get much of a choice, right? Mm-hmm. And then he goes off and he gets to practice the things that he's done. So he's been implanted with a bunch of shit. And then he goes out and he practices, and then they bring him back and they force him to go to another school, and then they send him back out to practice again. And then they bring him back and they force him to go to another school, and they send him back out to practice again, right? And they're mixing training and education together. And then they're going, all right, go back out there and now go do it. And then we're going to come back into the 4 years, and oh, guess what? Now you got to go to command college, right? So they are just jamming him full of information. Well, by the time he's 50 and he's put in charge of something, something significant, he's got the equivalent of a PhD in leadership, just doesn't have the title, but it is very purposeful. And he doesn't have any choice. They're just sending him and he's off and running. That's what it takes to actually do leadership training. A 2-hour seminar is not that. A 2-hour seminar is some basic terms and methodologies thrown out onto the table. And nobody ever goes and forces you to practice and drill on it and then brings you back and assesses it, which is weird because that's what we do tactically, yeah, right? Yeah. If we just use that analogy to look at tactics, we say, yeah, man, go pull that tank line. I'm going to stand here and I'm going to watch you. And then when you come back, I'm going to just fill in some gaps. Like, hey, good job on this, that, that. Here's what needs to happen on this, that, that. If you don't do that any faster, then the second engine is going to beat you, right? All right. Yeah. You know, if you don't do this right, you're going to get tangled up. And you're not going to be on the nozzle.
Yeah.
We don't have any ability to do that for leadership. Yeah. But I do think it needs to happen.
To some degree, to a level of degree, we have to, and I hate to use the word force, but for the sake of the conversation, let's use the word force. We have to force our leaders, current and future emerging leaders in the fire service, into leadership development, right? We need you to go out and take these classes. We need you to come back and put them into play and practice it. And then we need you to go out and take these next classes. We need you to come back and demonstrate and do this. Because, right, how many of us sit back, wait to take classes?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, now I'm going to go take a class because, you know, I see that there's a promotional exam coming up in 6 months. So now I'm going to go take these classes. And then that's my development leading up to something. But it sounds like for a true leadership development program, if you will, it's this constant sending people to do things, classes, taking courses, whatever it may be, coming back, applying it. Oh, by the way, you're going to go do this one now, right? I hate to use the word force, but at the end of the day, if that is our program, is that consistent sending people and encouraging people to take classes all the time, not just when there's an important event coming. And then we will eventually just have a culture of continuous development of new leaders.
Yes. And unfortunately, we lack the institutions to do that as well. I'm not trying to be skeptical. I'm honestly looking at this because I've been thinking about this most of my career.
Yeah.
We don't have the West Points, the Naval Postgraduate Schools, the Annapolises, the war colleges. We don't have the institutions. We should have, out of America Burning, right? That was one of the recommendations published out of that document out of the 70s. And that's why the National Fire Academy stood up. But the National Fire Academy has never funded well enough to actually become that institution, right? Yeah. And we probably need multiple of them across the nation to consistently send people to, so they can come back with a consistent, correct message.
Wow.
And lacking the institutions, we get put into an interesting environment. So here's my next controversial statement to piss
Please.
People.
I love controversial statements.
Our catalyst is the very high value of shitty leaders. So
wrong with
we
that?
We don't get someone coming in and telling you, hey, guess what? Pack your bags. We're sending you off to here. What we get is to observe shitty leaders work their way up. And then that becomes our catalyst, because all we know is that, well, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Like that was a good lesson of what not to do.
Right.
So I'm going to go start to try and figure this out on my own. And that That becomes one of our greatest values in the fire service. And I hate to say it like that, but most of us learn what not to do by watching other
Yes.
people absolutely screw it up. And that seems to be our cycle, as we will go through a series of shitty leaders
Yes.
that will be transactional. They will totally miss the principle of the problem, right? They are for themselves. They are not thinking about others. They are in survival mode. Right, someone has leverage over them, and they make terrible judgments, and they make terrible decisions. We watch them, and that becomes our catalyst to try and figure out how the hell do this correctly.
With all that, no, it's good. I love it. If I may ask, in your department, or even in a previous department that you worked for,
Yeah.
what was that leadership development like, right? So as I'm finding out, talking to individuals across the country, people on the show, even neighboring agencies here who I'll reach out to just to be curious on what they do. What is happening in the fire service or in your department as far as leadership development? Like, do you guys send people
So,
through formal leadership stuff?
yeah, we'll talk about my former fire department. So I'll call it an epiphany, but it was a muddled thought that had been in the back of my mind for a solid 10 years, and it finally formed into words. And I fortunately had a leader that was just crazy enough to back my stupid ideas. So I was looking at my agency at Sacramento. Sacramento is a hard environment to work in. Politically, it's a tough environment. And it always felt like we were just getting rolled. And I wanted to get ahead of the problem. And instead of trying to fix the leaders that had 2 to 3 years left, I realized, wait a minute, we need to get ahead of this like 15 years. Like, I need to be 15 years out. I need to stack the bench. So with this stupid idea, we started something called the Succession Project. So I actually looked, pulled the data out of our staffing software, looked at captains who were going to be here in 15 years. So, all right, look, here's the concept. It takes 15 years to develop a fire chief. You got to start early, a little bit like a general, right?
Yes.
General, it's going to take you 15 years, maybe longer. Better start early, right? So let's pull these captains who are going to be here for more than 15 years. I had a very specific protocol I wanted to run them through based on my research, and then an amalgamation of what was in the agency. So we sent an invite out to this group of captains, told them it's a day off, show up on your own. We're just going to talk about leadership stuff. I thought one or two people were going to show up. We had 30 captains show up.
Wow, awesome.
So we brought them in. So here's the protocol, the process we put them in through. This is called a combination of consensus building. But we gave them 3 post-it notes, looked at, standard post-it note, and each one of them got one on their desk. And we said, all right, write down the leaders that you respect the most right now, that you think are most influential. I don't care if they're formal leaders, I don't care if they're informal. Like, it can be an engineer, right? 3 names down. We're going to put them up on the wall. And then I want you to write down the strengths and weaknesses of those leaders. And then I want you to write down the number one problem that the fire chief should be fixing today. So we had 3 groups of post-its up there, right? 30 post-its with 3 names on them. You go over there, you look at the names, and names were very consistent. And you look at those names and you say, all those guys are done in 5 years. They're all gone. Everybody that you think is going to save you is gone in 5 years. We walked over to the strengths and weaknesses, and we said, you see those strengths and weaknesses that you think are in your leaders? They're probably in you. Figure out how to leverage your strengths and shore up your weaknesses right now. Start working now, because it takes time. It's not a simple fix, right? If you're not a good public speaker, you don't fix that in a week. Right?
Maybe not even in 10 years, but yes.
Better start now.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
No,
100%.
you're right. So then we went over to the number one problems, and the number one problem was very consistent. And we looked at it and said, that's your problem. You're going to be the last one standing in the room. That problem's still going to be here. You better start thinking about it now, because it doesn't get solved in a year. It
Right.
doesn't even get solved in 5 years. You have to start setting the chess table up now, and you better start thinking about it now. So when we did that, we kind of shocked and awed these 30 caps, developed a reading list very specific to
Oh,
bring them up, what's called the cognitive gym. I started them off
cognitive
with easy
gym.
books, the
Wow.
cognitive gym. Cognitive
love
gem
that.
is an analogy for, hey, I want you to read a really hard book, but I can't have you read it right now because it's just going to crush you. Right? It's a little bit like, my analogy of, the 315 squat. It's not where you start. Right?
Not me.
you don't just, slap three plates on both sides and start squatting. No, you got to build up to it. Well, that was a cognitive gym. Let's build up. So, the first book that we started with was Jocko Willett's Extreme Ownership, which I put out there. I actually ranked these books in difficulty, ranked them in relevance, and then ranked them in academic rigor. Right? Academic rigor. How well do they cite their sources? And then Jocko Willett looks like, hey man, this is a good book if you haven't figured out that you fucking own this problem yet, right? But it's also not where I want you to end. Like, those are just really neat war stories. It's a little bit like watching SpongeBob SquarePants. It's neat philosophy, but you don't bring it to the manager's table, right? It's if you haven't figured this out, that you're part of the problem, well, then you need to read that book. And when you're done with that book, put it aside. And then next, we brought them to Team of Teams, McChrystal.
Crystal,
McChrystal, a little bit harder to read, right? Starts to bring in some science, starts to talk about the conniving framework, starts to talk about Prisoner's Dilemma, right? These should be tools that you're bringing in so you can understand how you interact with people and why it works like this. And we started upping the game to Chris Fussell's One Mission, and then to books like The Lucifer Effect, Metaphors You Live By, Algorithms to Live By, and each book was progressively getting harder. So we would do a book, and then we'd bring them all back to City Hall and make them present. They got one slide, 2 minutes. Tell us what this book is about. What's your key points out of this book? And we saw some people that were really good public speakers. We saw some people that were terrible public speakers. We saw some people that, like, you're like phenomenal leader. You're super smart. People will follow you anywhere, but we get you up in front of an audience, you fall apart. Well, that ain't gonna work. We need you to stand in front of City Hall and City Council and argue for resources, right?
Right.
So I'm glad I know this now that you're 30, because by
Yeah.
the time you're 55,
Absolutely.
I need some
Wow.
balls of action, right?
Wow.
So each book we did this, we worked our way up to Algorithms to Live By. We did this for a few years until the pandemic hit, and then we had to stop meeting. But I never stopped watching.
Yeah.
So the results were, even now that I've left the agency, the results were the next battalion chief test. Everybody on that list except for one came out of the secession project.
Wow.
Now, almost all of your VCs are out of the secession project. Almost all of the ACs are out of the secession project. And one deputy is, right? You're starting to see this bench
Yep.
thinkers and readers and researchers climb. And in a way, I just built a bunch of self-educators,
Yep.
but it was trying to get them out of the bubble, like, stop reading self-help books, right? There's some really cool self-help books out there, like Jocko Willett's, or Ego is the Enemy. Like, those are neat books, but those fucking self-help books. Pick up something that actually has some meaning. Like Algorithms to Live By or The Lucifer Effect, and understand the impact that you have on people. Develop some hard skills, develop some soft skills so that you can lead this agency, because you're going to be the last one standing there 15 years,
That's
right?
the succession pro the succession project.
Yeah.
So it sounds like number one is recognizing that if you don't reach out to early and younger firefighters, you're going to find yourself developing leaders by accident or on purpose, those that are going to be here for a short amount of time. Meaning it's and there's nothing wrong, right, with developing a leader that may not be here in 5 years. Just the re in my opinion, just the return of investment is going to be a lesser time frame. You invest in someone that has 20 years left in the fire service, you get more return on investment because they're here longer. So number one, it's recognizing that we may have to intentionally, I'll use that word, people make fun of me because they do like a ding 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 every time I say that word on the show because they're like, oh, the intentional hit 20 today. And That was only my first time today. So, by the way, that turns out it was only one so far. But intentionally reach out to individuals younger or earlier in the career, and build them up. Let's just keep that simple and build them up.
Yeah.
But the number two is what you know, do something to where you're getting people together to. I love how you use stack the bench. That was an awesome term. We had Frank Lieb on from FDNY, and he used they have a deep bench. And I love that because it's just – and it was the same exact concept because what that meant was your future leaders, the future officers, the future chief officers, the future members that are running this department, it doesn't matter who's next because that bench is so deep. It's so stacked that like that next person is ready. It's not like, oh, my gosh, we got this person next. Doesn't matter. They're all going to be ready. And they're all going to be good. So I guess a question that I have is, you said you thought there was going to be a couple people at that book club or that initial meet, but you had 30.
Yeah.
This was an unpaid event, correct?
Yeah.
And people were like,
on their day off.
So how did you get there, right? Like if I sent an email, right? If I sent an email today with 30 officers and said, let's meet at the bar and let's just chat.
Yeah.
I mean, like you, I might have five. How did you get 30?
All right. So here's tough for me because now I'm not good at talking about myself, but if I think about this honestly, I think enough people on the agency at that point knew me long enough to trust me, to trust that I wasn't wasting their time. So you know, they had been around, they had been watching me for 15 years or more. I was very consistent in my behavior. Although the words weren't used, they knew that everything that I did was for their benefit. Right? I would tell people as a captain and as a battalion chief, I would tell them, I work for you. It's my boss that holds me accountable.
Right.
But when I choose to do work, it's for your benefit. Right? I'm not out here pulling tank lines for me. Fuck, I got this. Right? So I think it was... I do think that my position in that ask had influence on those that showed up. They might've been also a little curious, like what the hell is this? This agency's never done this before.
Yeah.
This is backed by the deputy chiefs as well. Right. So they're like, whoa, deputy chiefs are going to do something like outside of the box. And it's got this insane person that we know for 15 years. And an outside observation, I'll regurgitate what one of my best friends said, who was there watching. He said, look, they're so hungry for leadership that they will take just about anything, you know? So
wow.
I don't have a great answer for you on that other than some of my own observations as I think about that.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I mean, it started with someone that, you know, an influential person, a credible person. I've heard you say that a couple of times today is, and it obviously helped to have someone that's credible, and you took a risk, right? You put yourself out there, and for all you knew, it could have been two, it could have been zero people for all you knew, right? But it ended up being 30. But like they always say, without a risk, you don't have any reward. And then that succession project, it ended up being something that was just massively influential positively in the future of that organization that you're at. So that's
I did take a massive risk, and you know, and it was one of those, oh, I'll be the laughing stock of the agency,
yeah.
You know? But
it said again, don't thank me.
but what did I say in the beginning? Early winners don't make good leaders. I got the shit kicked out of me a lot in the beginning of my career. So yeah. I was at the point of, you know what? I'm going to take risks. Yeah. And you guys want to laugh at me? Fine. Laugh at me. But I know I'm not wrong. I know the principle, the problem is my job is to have positive succession planning. And if I look at myself in the mirror as a leader of this agency, then I am failing and lying to myself if I don't do this.
Wow,
so
wow.
Go ahead and laugh at me, but I'm not going to fail and I'm not going to lie to myself.
Wow.
My job is to figure out how to make you better than me. And although I don't have a recipe book that I can read, I know that I got to do something. And I know if I can get you to go to school and read books and believe in yourself, accept the fact that you will be in this position, if I can do those three things, then I can look at myself in the mirror.
Yes. And say, you did your part.
I did my part. Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I wasn't a fucking coward.
Wow.
Oh, you know, I led from the position of courage,
yeah.
not fear.
That's great,
And
dude.
I'm going to back up that first statement. I said, why early winners don't make good leaders is because those that get the shit kicked out of them in the beginning do develop true courage. We learn how to do things that scare us and face the fear when we know they're still right. Okay. Yeah, this is terrifying. Like, I'm going to be embarrassed again. I'm going to fail again, but I'm going to have the courage because I know it's the right thing to do. And sometimes you just got to try again and put yourself out there.
Yeah. We talked about things. We talked about leaders. We talked about what qualities, characteristics, attributes would make a strong leader. How do we get there? Let's talk about one thing. If I were to say, Chief, we all have a non-negotiable list, we'll say, things that you just absolutely cannot do. It'll be detrimental to your own development. It'll be detrimental to the organization. It'll be detrimental to the people that you serve, mentor, all the above. If I were to say, Chief, you had to pick one that you were going to talk to our listeners about and say, this is non-negotiable in a strong leader, what would that attribute or characteristic be?
I'm gonna box this into something called a breach of discipline, and I'm gonna relate that to transactional selfishness. So my no-go items has to be defined between the difference between a mistake and a breach of discipline. I expect mistakes. Mistakes are decisions and actions made with limited information. Everybody makes mistakes. I make them all the time. In fact, I expect them so much from my newly promoted captains or BCs that if I don't see them, I get nervous because it tells me you're either hiding them or you're not doing your goddamn job. Right? Because you just took on a new role and you're going to make some mistakes.
Absolutely.
And I want you to make them, I want you to learn from them. But my no-go, my stop, my uh-oh, we've got problems is breaches of discipline. That is when I start to see decisions made for your own personal benefit. And now I know if you don't overcome that or figure that out, you will violate the principle of leadership. Because what's the principle of leadership? Positive succession planning, right? And if you start to make selfish decisions, breaches of discipline, for your own benefit, well, then you're going to violate the principle of leadership. And you are not going to be a leader. You're going to be the catalyst for good leaders by being a shitty one.
Yeah,
Right?
yeah.
But yeah, that is my no-go. And I use those terms specifically, mistakes and breaches of discipline, to signal to everybody that I work for, say, this is what I'm watching for. And I am watching. And I will come after you if I see breaches of discipline because I need to get you out of the system. If you can't figure this out, then I need to get you out of the system. Right? Because my job is positive succession planning. And I cannot have positive succession planning if I have somebody in there who is selfish, who is not able to be humble, who's not able to learn, to develop, to practice empathy, right? To be adaptable. No, I need to get you out of the system. I need to protect the others that are willing to take that journey, right? To put themselves out there. So I use those terms very specifically. I actually write them down in both agencies. My new agency now, they've seen me write it down and they know, yeah, oh, you know what? Mistake. Cool. Man, I made mistakes. You know what? I had a battalion chief a few months ago, back his rig into a pole, and he was so nice, like, oh my God. I'm like, hey, buddy, you backed your rig into a pole. Shit happens, man. It was a mistake. I know you didn't do it on purpose, right? But that's different than calling in sick on Christmas.
Absolutely.
Right? You call in sick on Christmas, you better be goddamn sick. If you're gonna mando somebody else to come in on that day and be away from their family because you want to be all right, no, now we got breaches of discipline, right? You're starting to hide shit from me. No, that's my no-go. And now I know that you are not fulfilling that principle of the problem.
I read the book recently, it was the Five Principles of Human Performance. And the principle number one was exactly what you just said. It says people make mistakes, errors are normal. Like it has to, what I took from that and what I took from what you just said is you just have to know that errors are going to happen. Errors and failures are a part of success.
Yeah.
And stop looking at a failure or a mistake or an error as, well, what happened? What went wrong? Well, maybe nothing went wrong. It's a part of progress.
Yeah.
Good systems or good organizations, I'll say, build in error tolerance. But then I believe it equips leaders all the way up from the bottom up in that if you know errors will happen and you're not looking at it as a negative, it will be used as a good thing and it'll just be used as a tool to make everyone better instead of just always saying like something bad must have happened because you made a mistake.
We don't get better by always winning.
Exactly.
That is not improvement.
Yeah.
Running undefeated doesn't get anybody better.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If I wanted to do that, I would take the Kramer route and go fight a bunch of 10-year-olds.
Yeah.
Right? I'm undefeated. No, actually, no, you should probably try some harder stuff and put yourself out there.
Exactly.
But what that author said is very relevant to the fire service, right? Because I like the word they use, system, right? You got to have a system, right? Sometimes culture and system overlap because sometimes the culture adapts and progresses the system on. You also expect mistakes, but a leader who's looking out for you will put guardrails up for you to allow you to make mistakes in your lane, right? And not allow you to get outside to where you can make a mistake that is catastrophic for yourself. Like, you know, here's your sandbox, your metaphorical sandbox. Yeah. Here, make some mistakes. You're never going to progress if you don't make mistakes, right?
Exactly.
If you don't realize that you don't or do this on command and control, do it. And then I'm going to tell you, yeah, see how that didn't work? All right,
yeah.
Let's not do that again. That's perfect. And then you pass it on to the next person.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I'm on my way out.
I'm on my way out. It always goes back to that principle, like you said, is how do I guide you to be better than me? And if we live by that principle at every rank, at every position in our organization, I'm just imagining like the future of the organization years from now, and then years and years and generations from now. So that's
everything else is methodology, whether it's servant-based leadership, complex-based leadership, transactional-based leadership, transformational-based leadership, whether you go back to 1950s to Bass, it's all just methodologies to try and meet that principle, right?
Meet that principle.
And you spit methodologies out that don't work. You try new ones that do, but you don't lock in on them. You recognize what they are. Hey, man, this is methodology. And when the environment changes, I'm getting rid of this one. That didn't work no more.
Yep. Yep.
The principle never changes.
And the principle never changes. Methodology does.
Mm-hmm.
Some work some days, some work for other days, some work for some mm-hmm. systems, some don't work for don't work for other systems, but the principle is always the same. I love
yes.
that. That,
yes.
that connects very well. Okay. So this being an action-oriented podcast, obviously we talk leadership, we talk about what to do, what not to do, we talk about principles, methodologies, all the above. And then now we get to just kind of narrow it down to groups. So Chief, you served as a firefighter, you served as a company officer, and you served as a chief officer. So with these three groups, if you were to, as our listener base is tuning in of all ranks in the fire service, first group being a firefighter, what would you say to the group of young firefighters that they should be doing to ensure that they're going to grow into being an effective leader throughout their long career?
There's a few things there. Observe and watch the leaders that you think that are impactful. Recognize that there are formal and informal leaders, right? And if you see informal leaders that are positive, see what you can mimic out of them and see what is impactful, right? You can watch your formal leaders, the ones that are assigned to leadership roles, those are the ranks, watch those as well. But it's almost always more interesting to watch the informal leaders and see how impactful they are, because those will be the traits that you're going to want to start to pick up as you do become a formal leader, because those are good formal leaders. Those that were already leading the charge prior to somebody pinning a badge on them are always better.
Better. Absolutely.
And back to the man, don't beat yourself up over your mistakes. Just get right back up and expect to take some heavy hits.
Yeah.
This,
yeah.
It is a long way to the top if you're going to do this. And you are going to get knocked down and broken and beat and lied to and cheated, and something really bad and unfair is going to happen to you. Just get back up.
Don't make it complex. Just get back up. Okay, company officers.
Company officers, you now realize you are accountable and responsible for everything that your crew does or fails to do. That means when someone on your crew screws something up, I am looking at you, not them. It is your job to train them and prepare them for one of the most interesting, unique, and dangerous jobs that exists in the world. Right? It is not an easy task. You are the most influential person in the fire service because you have direct contact with those that voluntarily belly their way in to a burning building that is going to flash in 5 minutes and face structural collapse in 25. So, when that hits you as a company officer, that level of burden should motivate you to get your shit together and start learning everything that you can about becoming a professional firefighter. This is a profession, and it ain't about fantasy football or watching games on Sunday or figuring out what movies you want to see. It is about becoming a professional firefighter and looking what is happening out across the country and figuring out how in the world are you going to keep those three or those two that will follow you anywhere alive. Because it sucks to go to the burn center. I've been there a few times. And it sucks even more when it ain't you, it's the one that followed you.
Wow, that's powerful. Yes.
Let's go, chief officer.
Yeah, chief officers, all right. What do you have for them? They got to continue to grow. Hopefully,
Yeah.
it's they have the return on investment is many years to come, but it's called what it is. Some chief officers, I've not that much time left, but just because you don't have that much time left doesn't mean you don't no longer have influence with those below you or around you. So, what can chief officers do to continue to grow and be influential as leaders?
Realize who you work for right now. There's a difference between who you work for and who holds you accountable, right? Your boss may hold you accountable. You work for those captains who work for those firefighters, right? This is an inverse pyramid. Once again, you are accountable and responsible for everything your crews do or fail to do, right? Every firefighter needs a minimum of three things to survive their first day on the job. And guess who's fucking responsible for this? They need the right training, they need the right equipment, and they need a mentor. Those are the three things that every firefighter needs to survive their first day on the job. And now you, as a chief officer, have to make sure that those are available to them, right? You cannot train people during a fire, you have to train them before the fire. Right? If you're seeing tactics misapplied or unaligned on fires, that is your fault. You should have been ahead of that problem before it happened. That is the heavy burden of a chief officer. And now you have to start thinking out into the future. What equipment is going to keep us alive? What equipment is next? Right? How in the world are we going to do lithium-ion batteries, clean our equipment after all of those poisonous gases get released? Right?
Absolutely.
And now you have the last thing. Gosh darn it, this sucks. All those firefighters need mentors.
Yes.
Damn it, now you need to develop people, which means now you need to start developing your captains. I mean, purposely developing them into leaders, which means you yourself have to be a leader, which means you yourself have to be well trained and well educated and read almost every book out there that covers leadership and understand what it means at a metacognitive level, because you're going to have to start developing those young captains early on so that they can take your place. Welcome to the unbearable and heavy burden of a stupid white helmet, but you're the one that signed up for it, so now it's on you.
Mentor. I love how you went there. So a battalion chief or chief officer is a mentor to not just a few of them below, but all of them.
Yes. You got to remember how much when you were a firefighter, you looked up to chiefs. Those of us that wear the white helmet now, it seems like, yeah. But man, when I was a firefighter, the chiefs were They were like idols.
Yeah.
You're like, oh my God, the chief is here. It's not even a person, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
Yeah.
just like an idea out there. Like,
Yeah.
holy shit, stand up straight. Like, I hope my
Yeah.
uniform's on right. Right? Like, he's the person. This person knows all. Well, you got to remember, that's how they're all probably still looking at you, even though we know that we're just humans
Yeah.
always. But you need to make sure that those three things are secure. That is on you. If your people don't have the right training, that is on you.
Yeah.
You don't get to
Yeah.
point
Yeah.
to anybody else.
Training, equipment, being a
Mentor.
mentor. Love it. Okay, Chief, we talked a bunch about books, reading, concepts, methodologies, philosophies, all the above. And I do say this, what's your favorite book? Because as we know, it's an excuse out there if an individual, in my opinion, if an individual is simply, oh, I didn't have this training, or I didn't know about this, or I didn't know about that. There's lots of resources out there for our own taking. It just takes our own ability to be curious, and our own ability to be, putting our time in to better ourselves. So I say book, I say reading, but let's make that plural because I don't want to limit it to one. If you were
Yeah.
going to say some books, some resources now that people can buy and people can look up
Yeah.
right now to be better, what would they be?
So, guys, I'm going to burn a little more time on you. I'm sorry to torture you, but
No, no, no. I love this.
first we got to learn how to read a book.
Yes,
Right?
we
So we got
do.
to think about what are you going to do when you get a book, and
Yeah,
how do you
yeah.
get it? Right. All right. So I'm going to tell you right now, love Audible,
Got it.
and learn how to listen to books. But there is a technique to listening to books. I do not want you to try and pay attention to every word that's said. I want you to get an Audible book, run it at 1.5 speed, and go through it to the end. If you phase out, as we all do, phase out. Book it. If it's a good author, they're going to wrap it back up at the end again. But don't keep stopping it and trying to pay attention to what they're saying. Because the nice thing about Audible is you can just listen to it again. All right, so you got Audible. Now I use Audible as a survey. I go through a lot of books every year and I'll find a survey and then I'll be like, oh, wait, this one's gold, right? So like Team of Teams, right? I'm like, oh, this one's gold, right? Okay, now I'll get the hard copy. I'll get the hard copy because now I'm going to start marking it up. Right, I'm going to go back and I'm going to find the things that really caught my mind. And I'm also going to buy it on Kindle. I'm going to buy it on Kindle because I can search it. I can rapidly search it because I don't want to flip for every page where he talks about the Knyvenkrypt framework. But I do want to go through Kindle and do a quick search. Oh, there it is. Oh, okay. Now I need to go to here. I'm going to tag it up. Right. And now I'm going to use it in the class I'm going to teach, or I'm going to remember it. I'm going to ponder it for a long time because I'm not that smart. So I got to roll things around in my head for a long time. Right. So now that we got how to read a book, right, I want you to actually digest it. So if you're a firefighter and you're coming up, I do like Jocko's Extreme Ownership, just to get you to let you know, yeah, you own this. If you're a captain, I think Team of Teams is still one of my favorite catalysts.
Okay.
Right. Because McChrystal starts to talk about some very important stuff. As you start to work your way up into the chief's ranks, I actually pulled a stack of my favorite leadership books here.
Oh,
So,
let's I know we're not publishing the video, but would you mind going through some of those?
yeah. So if you're working your way up, Leadership in the New Science in a Chaotic World, I think, is applicable to what we do. And because we are expanding into rapidly moving times, you can pick this up on Audible. I also like The Extraordinary Coach. If you are talking about becoming a mentor, this will give you some basic tools. It's going to use the FUEL framework to basically have some conversations on how to push people forward. And I use it. It works. I practically use it and it practically works. So, Never Split the Difference
Got it, Chris
is,
Voss. Yep.
right. So he's a professor at USC, which is why I was forced to read his book
Didn't
again.
know he was a professor at USC. Okay.
USC brings in some pretty interesting people. I still use this.
Yes,
I will
yes.
still sit down and talk to an angry elected official and look at him and say, it seems like It seems like public safety is really important to you. Well, yes, it is. It sounds like you're saying these things need to happen. Well, yes, they do. How do I do that? Well, I guess we need to increase. Okay, I'll accept that as a solution.
Yeah. I love it.
I still use this.
And it works.
It does work, especially when someone's chewing my ass and I feel like I'm backed into a corner. Angry, I'll take a breath and I'll be like, okay, let me say it back to you and then say, oh, it seems like you're really concerned about this. Okay. How
Yeah,
do I do
love
this?
that. Yeah.
Now, there is an interesting one out there. If you are curious, just leadership in general, then North House has always done
Oh yeah, that's
an
right.
amazing
Yeah,
job
that's a big read. I know it. Yep.
on, and now look what an idiot I am. See how, I don't know if you, how marked up.
I could all the sticky notes, highlights. I could see it all.
Like when you get a doctorate in leadership, this is the book that you kind of teared through.
Yeah.
But I got to give this guy credit.
Yeah.
He has wrapped up just about every theory that has been published and put it into a book for you to
Yeah.
kind of give you an idea so that when you lock on to the next fad, and I will call them fad because remember, they're just methodologies, right?
Methodology.
Methodologies are fads, and you say, servant leadership. Yes, servant leadership is the thing. Well, he's going to break it down for you and say, yes, servant leadership, here's where it was published. Here was originally the idea came up. Here's how it was tested. Here, how it was never tested, right? Like, there's no empirical evidence whatsoever that says that that works. Here's its strengths. Here's its weaknesses. Here's the tools that it uses to assess.
Yeah.
And so it does a fantastic job of summarizing some of those. And I like servant leadership. I'm not crapping on it. I'm just saying that like he does a great job of telling you, hey, this is just someone's idea.
Yeah.
Like there's no evidence whatsoever that this works.
Yeah.
Or here's the studies that were done, and they were very specific to business in this realm, right? And that's a challenge with people selling leadership methodologies is they all suffer from survivorship bias. They only tell you the story that works. They never tell you when it failed, right? Because they are selling books.
Yeah.
So you're getting yourself wrapped up into this stuff and saying this is the answer, but you got to realize they survivorship bias is real. They're just telling you when it worked. They didn't tell you that seven other companies tried it and they all failed,
Yeah.
right? And just
Absolutely.
because GE was so successful doesn't mean it's the answer
Yes.
to
I
everything.
agree.
You just got to stick with the principle. Okay.
Yes.
So I took up enough time on that on how to read a
No.
book, what it is, and then some of my favorite. Well, oh, you know what? There's one more in here, little guy
Yes,
in here. All right.
please.
So appreciative inquiry. If you're not
Oh.
familiar with appreciative inquiry, the methodologies and the processes,
Wow.
if you're a dummy like me and you're moving agencies and you're walking into a different department or you're learning something new, appreciative inquiry is a great framework to start with. I pick this thing up all the time, but it is about asking questions more than it is telling people, right? And truly listening to what they're saying. You kind of wrap it up and thought appreciative inquiry. Like I'm asking and I'm really appreciating the answers, even though maybe I don't understand them or maybe they're not what I wanted to hear. Maybe I think they're nonsense, but I'm pushing those opinions out and I'm
Yeah.
just, okay, tell me what it is. And I'm trying to appreciate them so I can bring them in and digest them. I'm going to use some empathy to think about how you're thinking about them. And it's going to give me some really good tools because I
Yeah.
had to do that a lot in my new agency. Come out of a machine like Sacramento for 25 years and go into a fantastically supported, very agile agency in the Bay Area. I had to do a lot of listening. So, appreciative inquiry.
Appreciative inquiry. Love it.
Appreciative inquiry.
I'm gonna capture just one thing on that. I'll go in my soapbox a little bit because you said it and I loved it. You said you're reading these books, right? You're digesting the information in it, but the one thing that you was key is applying it and then you teach it. So what annoys me, and I'll go into my soapbox just a little bit, is We can all have the ability to go to a class. We all have the ability to read a book. We all have the ability to absorb information, but it means nothing until you apply it. And then this next step further is to then teach others about it or teach on that topic of what you learn. And the one thing that gets me is a lot of the extreme ownership, right? And that was a book that was recommended to us to read early on in our development organization. That book came out in 2017 or 18. Can't remember what year that came out. But anyway, the point being is extreme ownership, it doesn't mean anything after reading the book until we ourselves apply the concepts in it, right? To say I read the book, okay, great. But if you don't apply it, it meant nothing. So I love how you said you got to apply it. But then I love it further when you said, now I go out and teach it, whether it be the extreme ownership concepts or something else. So I guess there's no question, but can you just elaborate just a little more on applying something and then maybe even teaching it in a class or teaching others about it too? Because I believe that's what is the key there, is not just the resource that we get, but how can we now apply it, or you must apply it and even teach it to others.
The principle of leadership of positive succession planning. My job is to make you better than me. The only way I can do that is actually prepare myself and then go test it, right? I
Test it.
actually have to use it and test it. If I don't test it and just give it to you, well, I'm just a dick, right? I actually have to go pick up Chris Foss and sit down and use it to negotiate my last chief's contract. If you don't go to the last few pages of this book and actually map it out and test it on yourself, then don't hand it to somebody else. And then I figure out what works and what doesn't work. And then I give you what worked for me because my job is to make you better than me. And if I can get Chris Voss's framework into your hands sooner than it was in mine, then you'll be better than me. If I can figure out, here was the question of the secession project that we started with, is what would you have, if you could gone back in time, what would you have told 30-year-old Eric Sailors? If you could go back in time, what would you have told 30-year-old Eric Sailors? Well, let's just change the name and tell that person.
Yes.
And I did. It was a, all right, well, what would I tell Wade? I would tell him, oh, well, let's actually go tell him that
Go
then.
do it, right? Go do it. Pick up the phone.
Get him ready. So that this is the burden of being a chief at any rank. You are now the mentor. Well, guess what? You've got to go explore and exploit. Explore and exploit. You have to explore all this crap, this bookshelf. It's your burden to explore it. Test it. Figure out what works and then exploit the stuff that actually works and give it to the people behind you. Don't
Wow.
just hand them crap. I mean, and you really have to use it. So
Yes.
I only pull things that I really use. Dude,
Yes.
I have like four copies of Team the Teams, just because I honestly use the things out of that book,
Yeah. Yeah.
right?
Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, for what, right? You have a book, you don't apply it. What's the purpose? Why do you own it?
You're violating the principle of leadership.
Yeah.
If the book sounded good to you and you didn't apply it, well, then it's shit.
Yeah.
Because you actually, I actually got to see you. I don't need any more good idea fairies.
No.
I need practicality. And there's, for those of us who are thinking about a higher education, there's a term for people like me. It's called a pracademic.
For academic, I love that.
Pracademic. So academics are
Cool.
useless because they don't do anything,
Right.
right? They're theoreticians.
Until
There's
you
always
put
a
them into
gap
play.
between, yeah, there's a gap between theory and practice, right?
Yes.
Well,
Yes.
pracademic,
Puts them together.
yes, I am actually practicing this nonsense that you guys are putting into books and figuring
Yeah.
out what works and doesn't work. I am a
Yeah.
pracademic. I'm an academic because I study it, I
Yeah.
read it, I teach it, I write about it, but at the same time, I'm practicing it. My ass is still on the line.
Yes. This next part I'm going to say, I hesitate to say because a lot of people will be rubbed the wrong way when I say it. But hey, we were honest today in today's conversation. But I actually believe that If an individual were to go take a class and they were compensated, say, for example, overtime to go take the class, and say it was a leadership philosophy, and the expectation was that you learn it, you own it, and then you the expectation is that you're going to apply it into practice. But you never did. You went and took the class, you absorbed the information, but you never actually applied it or taught it to others. To an extent, I believe you actually stole from the department.
Yeah.
Because you took overtime, you collected money. The department expected you or wants you to adopt these philosophies, learn it and apply it, but you only learned it and you kept it to yourself.
Yeah.
To an extent, you took without giving it back. And so I always believe whether you agree with the concept that a chief is teaching you, whether you agree with what the organization, the stance on something, you don't have to agree with everything, but you're there to be aligned in the mission. Because that's what your job is to do. So I love how you said you got to apply it because
Yeah.
otherwise it's just words.
Yeah.
So.
It is. They're just ideas. And you know what? I'll bridge that analogy into real life. Hey man, if you went to a class on VES, Vent Inner Search, and decided the first time that you were going to practice that shit was on a real fire, you're a dummy. Right?
Yeah. Right.
You better go to the VES class. Bring it back to your environment and
Yes.
then practice it a ton.
A ton.
Figure it out before
Exactly.
you actually take a window, belly your way into the flow path, and get cooked
Yes.
without any actual real skill sets.
I love
Right?
that.
And
I love that.
it's the same process for these books.
Yes.
Yeah, you're moving into a
It is.
leadership position. Better figure out how to use these.
Yeah.
And you can see mine. Like, one of the things that I've learned was to be authentic. I don't try to be somebody else, which is probably why I cuss so much. There's just this,
I do the
I'm
same.
just authentic. I believe in this stuff, and I'm not trying to pretend to be somebody else. I learned that from leadership books, and then I just started applying it. I'm like, all right, man, this is it. This is me. And tomorrow, hopefully,
Exactly. And tomorrow, the hope you're not going to be any worse, but to an
I'll
extent, you
be
will be
better.
better. All right. My favorite part of the show, Chief, and I lie, that's a lie, because every part is my favorite part. But this is a great part of it. We're here today because of a leadership challenge. Chief Marquez said, you got to reach out to Chief Sailors. It helped us foster this conversation today. So I'll ask you, Chief, to help us further the conversation on leadership for our listeners in the fire service. Is there someone else out there that you would like to formally challenge through the leadership challenge to be a future guest on the kitchen table?
It's tough because I have so many mentors. I am standing on the back of giants. There were so many people that helped me out because I'm such an idiot, that were just constantly propping me and pushing me in the right direction. So when I says I'm like, oh, there's a list of names that so long. But I still have one mentor. Well, not just this. I've got a bunch of mentors that are still working. There's one that is nearby me, and I think you'd be willing to do it, and that is Chief Chris Tubbs. And
Oh, I know that name.
he's from Washington. This is
Okay.
why he came to mind. I've got another few best friends that work in SoCal as fire chiefs. I was like, you know, Chris has spent time in Washington. That's where he's been most of his time. He's now down in South Marin. I love his perspective, and I ask him questions because he has such a breadth of knowledge, and he's a super interesting dude. We're going to do a co-presentation coming up at a conference on storytelling for leaders, because story. You ever heard the term "talk is work"?
Oh, yeah.
78% of what a fire chief does is talking. That's how we move shit, is we talk. Because we're always communicating the mission, the message, the values, right? And we're always doing the form of stories, right? So how do you tell these stories? So yeah, that's my leadership challenge, is going out to Chief Chris Tubbs.
Chris Tubbs, if I can ask, where did he work in Washington? I know this name. You know where did he work?
Don't know for sure. I
Okay.
think it was near Seattle.
It is near Seattle, Mercer Island.
Maybe.
Mercer Island. Okay. That's interesting. I know, actually, I might have met him once before. This was probably 15 years ago. Anyways, I think I know the name. I know the name, and I'm trying to remember if
He's been in the game way longer than I have, and he knows way more than I do.
got it.
Yeah, but no, he's a
Awesome.
fascinating character.
Awesome. Well, what I'll do is I'll reach out to Chief Chris Tubbs to see if he would take up Dr. Saylor's leadership challenge and being a future guest. So thank you so much, Chief. Before we close, how do we find Chief Saylor in the future, right? We talked a lot about stuff today. There are going to be listeners that are going to be like, I love that message. How can I find him? Can I attend a seminar? You talked about you're doing a discussion, I'm assuming sometime next year. But how do we look you up, Chief, and how do we find you if we're looking to find you in the future?
So you can look me up on Facebook, and you can always just go to El Cerrito's webpage and find Fire Chief Eric Saylors. You can just Google my name and go to El Cerrito's. Kick me an email. I do get requests probably once a week for either active shooter training or leadership training, and I am 100%, I will get back to you. I will respond. And I donate a lot of my free time to people that are looking for help because my tenet of leadership is positive succession
It's
planning.
five succession planning.
I will pick up that phone. I will talk with you. I will tell you what I know. Don't have all the answers, but I won't bullshit you. I'll at least tell you, yeah, this works. That doesn't work. And I welcome anybody to reach out. I teach a lot of chief officers classes in California, and it is not uncommon for a student to reach out post a class to have some conversation or to give me some ideas or to ask questions.
That's
So
awesome.
anybody listening to this podcast, feel free to email me. Just go to El Cerrito's website and you'll
Your
see
own.
my contact information, or look me up on Facebook, kick me a message,
There you go.
and I will get back to you.
Thank you, Chief. And he's not lying. He got back to me within, it might have been hours, if not a day. And that's how we're ended up with this conversation today. So thank you, Chief. What would you like to leave our listeners with as far as your lasting leadership thoughts?
Take care of the people behind you. It is all about the people. You keep the main thing, and it is people. And when things go wrong, you stick with the main thing. Focus on the people. They're those that solve problems. They're the ones that will replace you. They're the ones that will meet the mission better than you did. They are everything.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in today to the Kitchen Table. We truly hope that you found this time valuable. We hope we've inspired you to take action, to lead, and to spread the leadership conversation. Till next time, be safe, be intentional, stay curious.